سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، one of the most esteemed terminology in Islamic sciences from the Quran is tafaqquhu fid-deen. This term that is used, whenever it's used, whether it's in the Quran or hadith, is used in a very esteemed and respectable way. Tafaqquh means deep understanding, to gain deep understanding of deen, of Islam. And Allah, this is used in riwayat also in the ayats. I'll just read a hadith for you in which it is said that whenever Allah wants to give someone a special blessing, a great blessing, he said, إِذَا أَرَادَ اللَّهُ بِعَبْدٍ خَيْرًا تَفَقَّهُ فِي الدِّينِ. That when Allah wants to give someone a blessing, a khair, a very great goodness, He gives him a strong and deep understanding of deen, of religion. The word tafaqquh, from the word fiqh, means to understand, have a deep understanding. We use the word fiqh for a special science in Islamic knowledge, which is regarding ahkam, about rules and laws. Whenever we mention fiqh, we have used it in obviously a very specific way. We say that these are ahkam, these laws, wajibat, muharramat, makruh, mustahab. These things are mentioned in books of fiqh. We have different books of fiqh written by the maraji that we read in order to make taqleed and follow. But the word tafaqquh that's used in the Quran, in the hadith, is far more broader, is more comprehensive than this word that we have, that we use in fiqh. This is far more comprehensive in this regard. It encompasses everything, whether it has to deal with ideology, whether it has to deal with akhlaq, whether we have to deal with aqaid, whether we have to deal with, for example, philosophy of Islam. All these things, when we look at them, we see that these are all included when we say tafaqquh. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
And the meaning of tafaqquh is deeper than the meaning of fiqh. And here is what I want you all to understand today, my friends. Just as a introduction, I'm giving this and we will move on from here. What is it what I want you to understand is this. You see, you have the book of Ahkam. In it, we have, for example, rules and laws about prayer, about fasting, about Hajj, about all these things. We have rules regarding that, laws regarding that. Now, that itself is a knowledge. But before we can even get to that knowledge, before that knowledge can become useful for us and beneficial for us, there is another knowledge that we require. And that knowledge that we require before we even reach to this knowledge is many times ignored. Not even spoken about. Not even talked about. See, we learn about, for example, we ask, you know, so Marana, is this haram for me to do this? Then yes, for example, it's haram to drink alcohol. Okay. Is this wajib for me to do, to pray? Say yes, it's wajib for you to pray. So now you have the knowledge that prayer is wajib. You have the knowledge that beer is haram. Right? So everyone knows that. You see, this is a knowledge that you gain from where? From fiqh. From this knowledge, this ahkam, these rules. You earn that knowledge. But before you even learn that knowledge, there was another knowledge that was necessary for you for this knowledge to become useful. If I know that this thing is haram for me, does that knowledge, knowing that this is haram for me, is that knowledge enough to make me stop from doing it? If I know that a prayer is wajib for me, just knowing that prayer is wajib, is that enough for me to make me pray? You see, how many people know the wajibat and muharramat? How many people know that this is haram and this is halal? But knowing that this is haram and halal doesn't make a person do it or stop him from doing it. Before you even get to that knowledge, what is the motivation? What is the inspiration that will make you act on the knowledge of halal and haram? You see, there is a knowledge that even before that, you know what haram and halal is needed in order for us to act on what we know. Many people know what's halal for them. Many people know what's haram for them. Many people know what's wajib for them, but they still do otherwise. You see, so the knowledge of that is not helping them. They need that motivation to actually work on their knowledge. And this is where you see many people do not know how to address this issue. They don't know how to address. How do you inspire someone to act on their knowledge? How do you motivate someone to implement the knowledge that they have? How do you do that? This is where people are lacking. This is where we see that. Even people who come on the member don't want to tackle this because a lot of time they themselves don't understand. How do you make them do it? Just say, just go and say about halal and haram, that this is wajib on you, this is halal on you, this is haram on you. Okay, I said it. But is that what's going to make you act on it? What is the inspiration, my friends? What is the motivation? What is the drive? Where do we get the driving force from? That knowledge is never given. That's why Allah didn't say, know about halal and haram and that's it. No, He says, tafaqquhu fid deen, have a deep understanding of deen. So when you have that deep understanding, that will make you act on what you know. This is what is required of us. Let me elaborate that if you send me allow. Salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You know, our education system is flawed. It's not a new news I'm giving you. It's not surprising. Maybe it might be for some people who came from abroad, you know, they don't know better. They go to the, universities here and colleges here, and they think that this is wow, you know. But those who know what the education system is know that this is flawed. And what we do is that we take that education system that's here and then put it in our madrasa, in our Sunday schools, our Islamic schools. And we expect now the kids who are learning in the madrasa to learn Islam and to become mu'min. Now, they will learn Islam. There's no problem, they will learn Islam. But would they become Muslim? There's another thing, here what happens is that you see that the kids, they know all the ahkam of Islam. In fact, more than the adults do. Those kids that are going to madrasa, right, if you ask them what are the shakiyat of prayers, the doubts in prayers, they'll mention now all 23 of them. Right? Now how many adults know those 23? Doubts of prayers. Right? So now, why the kids are learning it, right? They know it. Now, when we look at those kids, they know all the shakiyat of prayer, they know all the rules of prayers, but when it comes to actually practicing it, now we have to shout at them. It's time for prayer, prayer. I'm playing. Wait a minute, but I thought you went to school. I thought you went to school, why aren't you praying now? See, the teacher there, they think that their responsibility is done just by teaching them that this is wajib on you. But they don't understand that the issue is not about teaching them that this is wajib or not. The issue is, are you motivating them to implement that wajib that they're learning? So now, in order to implement them, what do? They give them incentives. Right? This is what we do. The education system, what it does, is that in order to make people learn, right, they will give you numbers. The whole education system is based on numbers and marks and grade. So, for example, if you do well in the test, you get a certain grade. So, they think that this will motivate them to learn. And them just learning would be enough to make them a mu'min. And this also goes to the homework also. Now you have, for example, homework coming home. And then, you see, the kid, he comes to me and says, listen, you need to sign this. What's this? Oh, this is a paper that's going to tell the teacher that I did my homework and you're going to sign this. He says, what will happen if I do that? He says, well, I'll get a grade. And then there's a homework that says, this is the paper that you have to sign in order to tell the teacher that I have prayed at home. So they'll do the Maghrib and Isha and they say, watch me pray, and they'll pray and then they will get a grade for that. I said, listen, why is there an incentive for doing that? Well, as long as they pray, it's all right. He said, you see, this whole idea of giving incentive in order to educate them on Islam and making them Muslim, this is what's wrong with our education system. Why are you bothering this kid with all this? Why are you bothering this kid with all of this? This kid is coming home and saying, I'm going to pray and I want you to see if I'm praying, I'm going to get a grade for it. Well, what if you don't get a grade for it? Are you going to stop? Yes, it's obvious. I mean, that's the obvious message that I'm getting, that I pray because it's great. They're thinking that, well, let him pray, let's trick him into praying. And maybe, if he gets tricked, maybe he'll get a habit of it and he won't leave it. My friends, Allah and Ahlul Bayt have taught us to give Islam to our children, not to trick them into it. Right? Not to deceive them into it. And here we are trying to trick them into this. Oh, is it haram? No, it's not haram. We're not talking about haram. We're not talking about sin also. The issue is the idea of education in Islam is not through hook and crook. The idea is not to just let them know that this is wajib on you. The idea is to give them the motivation by which they can practice Islam. Make them a mu'min. This is what you have to be after. And this is why we see that when we go to Ahlul Bayt and when we want to learn Islam from them, then you see another brand of Islam being taught to us. How they taught Islam to us and how they gave Islam to us, they made believers.
Oh, subhanAllah.
They made believers, my friends. They didn't just teach you halal and haram, this is halal and haram, and then you become a hypocrite and saying, yes, I know Islam. I don't practice it, but I know it. Friends, this is where we need to understand that no, the proper way of doing things is to learn from Ahlul Bayt how they taught us. This is not my subject, I'm not going to it. I just want to give it as an introduction to what I'm going to say next. Right? I'll just give a window. I'll open a window and inshallah, you know, we'll go into the house and the door later. You want to know how to give the drive to children to be motivated to practice what they learn. Ourselves also, we see that we have a hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He said that before your child even starts praying, when he's 5 years old, teach him the saying, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-ali al-azim. Teach him this saying. Let him know what it means. This is what is going to drive him in. Before he learns how to pray, teach him this. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-ali al-azim. That's this saying. Now, what it means, what it ponders, inshallah for another day. Right? But understand, there's a reason. And the idea is what? Learn the knowledge of motivation and inspiration before you learn the knowledge of the laws and rules and aqaid and all these other things. Become a mu'min that when he gains something, you know he's going to just act on it. That's it. You know? Act on it. Many religious people don't understand this. Right? In fact, it's harder for them to understand than those who are new to religion. Right? Because they're so caught up in thinking what they know is right that they never have the time to learn what is right. They understand this. And hence, because of their preconceived notions of what they think is right and what they think they know is right, because of that they are now just deceiving themselves in knowing that. It's better for younger people, for those who are just learning Islam, they're much better off. They never have preconceived notion what is right and wrong, and hence, they, at the end what they do is right. They understand what is right. Let me give a small example I gave long time ago so that we can go on with this from here. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
This is the story that Sadi had said in his Gulistan. He had a small story about this one young person who became religious. And in those days, it was very hard to see a young person becoming religious, right? And he used to come to the masjid and pray. And all the people around him were old people, and old people, they all, you know, self-proclaimed muttaqi people, you know. So they were there, and the only person who was there was this young person. So when a young person comes, for them, right, this is like fresh meat, so that, you know, they can become his teacher now. Right? So everyone wants to become his teacher, always advising him this and that, because they can't advise each other, they're all old, no one wants to listen to each other. Right? So when they find a young guy, they're all after him, wanting to advise him. in fact, listen, let me teach him a few things, right? And they're trying to teach him a few things and here and there, this and that, right? So he becomes religious, he starts, you know, to work in the masjid, you know, doing things and this and that, you know. So the imam looking at him that he's attending prayer all the time and all these things, you know, he comes to him and says, listen, you know, you should do more work for Allah, you know. He says, whatever, you know. So he gave them a broom and said, you know, would you please sweep the dirt out of the masjid? He threw the broom and went away. And the elders are like, ha, you see, he still has ego. Right? He still has ego. And that's what they thought. So now what happened is that after some time, one of the elders met this young guy in the street. He said, listen, you're a good person, this and that, you're young. And you shouldn't be upset with the imam if he's asking you to sweep some dirt out of the masjid. He says, you know, I mean, what did I do? He says, you know, I mean, you walked away. This is arrogance, this is ego. You shouldn't be having ego. You're a religious person. We should all be obedient to Allah. He said, listen, if you heard what the imam said, meaning the imam of the masjid, if you listened to what the imam of the masjid said, what did he say? He said, you know, to sweep the dirt out of the masjid. He says, you know what? The only dirt I saw was myself. Meaning that you old cats, in all this life, you have never understood that. And this one young person understood. What is the reality? Right? What is the reality? My friends, understand this, right? That is what you want. That type of understanding. Right? That is the type of understanding that you are looking for. Right? And when you get that type of understanding, then hadith makes sense to you. Ayat makes sense to you. The character and history of Ahlul Bayt makes sense to you. Then it becomes real for you. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Allah. Imam Hussein, on the night of Ashura, told his companions to leave. He asked them to leave. He said, you know, you don't need to be with me. Go from here. You don't need to leave. You know, be here with me. Understand how Islam is taught, my friends. Really how he's taught, you know. He said, you know what, if you think that my bay'at is going to be a pressure on you, I take my bay'at, my allegiance away. You know, go away. You don't need to be here. These people are after me, their war is not with you. So, you know what? Please, you don't need to stay here. You see, every reason or every wrong reason that these companions have to stay, Imam Hussein is removing all those wrong reasons. And he's making sure that if you want to stay here, stay out of your own free will. Not me. I'm not going to pressure you. I'm not going to emotionally blackmail you. There's no pressure. There's no emotional blackmail. You know, a lot of times when we want people to come, we put an emotional blackmail on them. Oh, you should come here for this, and you know, you have haya and ghairat, and you are this and you are that, and you know, they're being blackmailed to come. They feel bad if they don't come. Look at Hussein. Hussein is saying, listen, I don't want you to come, be here because you feel bad leaving me. Don't be here for that reason. There's no emotional blackmail. I don't want to put you through any type of pressure. You want to stay here? You stay here because it's your own choice. Because it is your own choice that you want to stay here. That's why you want to stay here for. My friends, this is how you want to give Islam. This is how you want to teach Islam to others. There's no pressure on you. I'm not going to put any pressure on you. You make that choice. You make that choice. You see, when you look at the Allah's book is like that. It's not just attraction. You see, my friend, understand this very well. When you look at Allah's book, there's attraction and repulsion in it. It's not just all attractive. Right? It's not just all attractive. Meaning all attraction, you know, yes, this is all good, you know, we are going to Jannah and you get this many hoor and you get this many things, you get this many things. And you're like, wow, Allah's book is so nice. He is such a merciful Lord. Right? He is kind to us. It's not just attraction, it's all repulsion. Listen, if you don't do this, this is the hellfire. Let me tell you what the hellfire is. There's hope, there's fear. There's jazibah, there's attraction, and there's dafa'ah. There's repulsion. That's the way Allah is. He said, listen, I'm not going to fool you into coming into Islam. I don't need that. Just like that, Imam Hussein doesn't need prisoners of emotional blackmail that here, you're here because of this reason. Right? I have more people here to protect me. It's not about that, my friends. This is the teaching of Islam. Teach them the right way. Yes, when you go to those speeches that are all about Jannah and saying, listen, you all are Shia, just cry and that's it, you go. One-way ticket. I'll give you a one-way ticket. You'll see there'll be thousands of more people, not just you, there'll be many people here. There'll be many people in that majlis. Why? Because there's a one-way ticket being given. Right? But when you teach Islam like Quran did and like Ahlul Bayt did, then you will only have 72. Then you only have 72. This is the way Islam is. This is the way Islam teaches you. You made the decision to be right. Because Islam wants to make you a true believer, not just someone who's here because we tricked you into being here. Right? No, it's not about that. You be here because of your own. Why? Because Allah wants you to be good. But He knows in order for you to be good, He's not going to trick you into coming and saying that, okay, right? I'll make this illusion for you that you just go after this illusion. No, this is a reality. This is how Islam is taught, my friends. Karbala teaches that. Imam Hussein taught that Islam in Karbala. This is the lessons why. This is why we are learning the lessons from Imam Hussein. Sometimes these lessons are hard. They're tough. They're difficult. But you know what? This is what's going to make us a believer. These lessons. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. When you want to know the lessons, and I mentioned this yesterday, and we're not going to go away from that topic, and that is Ithar. Ithar is the lesson that we learned from Imam Hussein. These lessons that we are learning, my friends, these lessons, knowing them by sitting in the majlis for 1 or 2 days is not enough. It's not enough. You know, yes, you will understand those lessons, you will have an idea what those lessons are, in these majlises, but for those lessons to become a part of your life requires a lot of burden, requires a lot of effort on your part, on our part. There is no way out of this. I will not give you a simple pill and say, well, you know what, this is a lesson, I'll give you this pill tonight and inshallah you will be alright for the next, you know, inshallah how many years. No, there's no such pill, my friends. These lessons we are learning from Karbala are real lessons that require you to make that effort to make yourself a human being, an insan, a mu'min. And it requires a lot of effort. It's not easy. Don't think that one night you will be able to change it. And we have the examples, and they give the examples of Karbala, and they say, look in Karbala in one night how people changed. And that's it, you know, this is what we are waiting for. When Karbala happens, when Imam Hussein will be in Karbala, wait till that night comes to us and we will make that decision also. Yes. Let me give an example, you know, so that we can learn what happens with that one night decision. Because when the test will come on you, when Karbala will happen, what happens? Just let me explain that. And we're still on the subject of Ithar. I explained what Ithar is yesterday a little bit. I said Ithar is what? Ithar is when you give yourself up for someone else, not Allah. For someone else, for Allah's sake. We give the example of Imam Ali. right? How he gave himself up for the Prophet in order to sleep in his bed, right? This is Ithar, and I'm still on that subject, but let me give you an example so we are able to understand this subject better. Send aloud salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Alright. I'll say the name, you can say Lanatullah together, alright? Okay, Umar ibn Sa'd.
Lanatullah.
Okay. You know, so that's organized, right? Let's talk about Umar ibn Sa'd. All right, inshallah. Now you can say it to yourself, right? Let's go on to the speech, right? This Umar ibn Sa'd, let me just give a small, brief history about him. And then we will do an analysis, right, of what happened. Umar ibn Sa'd, who was this person? Where did he come from? This and that. In Medina, he was raised, he was the son of a very well-known companion of the Prophet. Sa'd ibn Waqqas was a very well-regarded companion. What he ended up to be, that's not our problem. But, well-regarded companion, right? Respected by Muslims. You know, there was maqam that he had. When he used to come, people used to hear that. Umar ibn Sa'd was his son. Umar ibn Sa'd grew up with Imam Hussein. In the neighborhood. Right? Being from the same tribe. Right? Grew up with Imam Hussein. Right? This Umar ibn Sa'd, when he used to speak, people used to listen to him. When he used to speak, because he was close to the Prophet, meaning he lived around the Prophet, when he spoke, people would believe that these are the words of the Prophet when he said things. Wow. Right? Because he's from his tribe, he's from his own place. He lived around there. He had that much respect. He had that much respect in the eyes of the people. Wow. People looked up to him. Right? People looked up to him. One of the things, the traits of Umar ibn Sa'd was that he never got involved in any battle. He never got involved in any fight. He never took sides. Right? He never took sides. When Imam Ali fought against Muawiyah, so Amir al-Mu'mineen asked him to join. And he told Imam Ali that, listen, I will not get involved in this fitna. I will not get involved in this fitna. This is your own problem.
Wow.
Go.
Wow.
Muawiyah approached him. Now, understand the reply he gave to Muawiyah. He said, listen, when Muawiyah approached him, he told Muawiyah, when I said no to Ali, who in the hell are you? Who cares about you? Told that to who? Muawiyah. When I said no to Ali, you know, I mean, Ali had more right that I should join him. Then who are you that I will join you? But he rejected Muawiyah that way. Right? This is Umar ibn Sa'd. Now, we're talking about one night decisions. This person never got involved in anything. Ibn Ziyad, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, he was the, you know, he was like in Yazid's empire, he was in charge of the Eastern Empire. The Eastern Empire. He was in charge of Iraq, Iran, and all those places. Holding on to that, controlling that. He was sent to Kufa, he came to Kufa, and he was a statesman, he was a diplomat. He knew how to talk, he knew how to work people. He came there, and he called Umar ibn Sa'd. He said, Umar ibn Sa'd, you know, listen, he didn't ask him to do anything. He said, here, First, what he did is that I want to give you the city of Ray. You're in charge of it. You are in charge of it. That's it. See, understand what happened, my friends. Very, very subtle what happened. He says, here, take it. It's yours. Umar ibn Sa'd took it. He said, all right, great. Now, actually, he didn't go there. He was like announced that he's in charge of Ray. People started congratulating him, saying him this and that, and you know, high fives and everything. Right? So after the announcement was made, then Ibn Ziyad called him and said, listen, there's one thing I want you to do. Alright, one thing I want you to do. What's that? He said, listen, either you need to get rid of Hussein or get bayat from him. Umar ibn Sa'd knew Imam Hussein. He says, but Hussein will never agree to making allegiance to you, to Yazid. He will never do that. He said, well, that's the next choice then. Go ahead. You know what to do. He said, but you know, I can't kill Hussein. Are you kidding? And then he went. And he went to his advisors, all the people. He went to his son first. He told them that this is what Ubaydullah wants me to do. His son said, father, are you crazy? Are you insane? You're going to kill the grandson of the Prophet? No, there's no way. It will not go. This is not right. He asked his other advisors. They all said, listen, Ray is good, but don't do this. Don't do this. All of them advised him that way. And Umar ibn Sa'd, now what he did is that he came to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad and said, listen, the offer is good, you know, but I can't do this. I can't do this. Now, at first I'll just mention the whole story, then we'll analyze it, right? Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, all right, you don't want to do this? He says, no. Then, all right, you know, then you know what, I'll have to take the city of Ray back. Now you see, here also he didn't have a problem. Understand this. All right, you know, at first he was like, but how, and this and that, right? But he said, okay. Then Ibn Ziyad said, all right, I'll just give it to someone else. Now when he heard about someone else, that's when he stopped. So, you see, I'll just mention the story, then I'll analyze it. You see? Someone else? Yes, someone else. And then he started to wiggle around, bob and weave, you know, this and that. And Ibn Ziyad saw this and he said, listen, either you kill Hussein or I'm going to get rid of your family. And he said, all right, you know what? Okay. He accepted it. He accepted it. And after that, when he accepted it, it went on. And then he said that, listen, you know, I will try not to kill Hussein. He was giving excuses. Of course, you know, this is just a threat. This is just a bluff we're making this bluff. He wasn't saying that he's going out to kill Hussein. Now, he was saying that, listen, it's just a bluff. Right? It's only bluff. I'm not going to kill Hussein, this and that. You know, we know that. It's not going to happen. We just think that bluff it so he can give bayat and this fitna is finished. Right? My friends, just so you understand two things from here. Two things I want you to understand from here. First of all, this Ibn Ziyad, right, knew. Why was he so adamant to get Umar ibn Sa'd? Because he knew that in Kufa, Umar ibn Sa'd is the only one who has that much respect in the eyes of the people who can fight against Hussein. He's the only one who could fight against Hussein, meaning people will come after him. Why? Because when Imam Hussein came to fight and Umar ibn Sa'd fought him, right? When Umar ibn Sa'd went out, he knew that when he said, Khaylullah Arkabi, these are the horses of Allah, ride on them. Then you see people listen to him. This is Umar ibn Sa'd who's speaking. He says, Ilal Jannat, to heaven. and everyone rode with him. But he was from the companions of Rasulullah. He had the moral stand to stand up against Imam Hussein. When Imam Hussein came on Ashura with the Quran, he said he read the Quran. And not just the Quran, he came out with Ali Asghar also. There also, you see, it didn't matter. Because Umar ibn Sa'd was able to put down that. Ibn Ziyad knew this, that the only one who will be able to neutralize what Hussein is doing is Umar ibn Sa'd. The first reason he trapped him, he knew that. And how did he trap him? This is where you understand, my friend. And we come back to the topic from yesterday. Umar ibn Sa'd was ready to give up. He said, no, I will not do it. When he heard that Ray is getting out of his hands, he didn't care. But when he heard someone else will get it, when he heard that someone else will get it, now he could not handle that. How can something that I have be gotten by someone else? You see, this rivalry, it's not greed, it's rivalry, you know, meaning that avarice. I don't want someone else to have it. If it's out there somewhere, I don't care. But if someone else has it, then I will feel bad about it.
Wow.
This, my friends, is the opposite of Isar.
Wow.
This is the opposite of Isar. If he had known what Isar is, if there was a bit of Isar inside of him, he would say, it doesn't matter, go. This is why Imam Ali alayhi salam said to Dunya, Ya Dunya Hurra Ghairi, go and deceive someone else. You think I'll be attracted by these things? If you are in someone else's hand, I wouldn't have any jealousy at all. If you are in someone else's hand, I wouldn't have any jealousy of you. Nothing envy, you know? I mean, this dunya, you're like a bad spouse, you know? Go ahead, go in someone else's hand. I won't have any jealousy. Go in someone else's hand. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me. This is, my friend, this avarice that, you know what? Someone else will have it. Now, this is hard on him. That is what made him make that decision. I will do it. This is what made him make that decision. And he ended up doing what? He's the one who said, hey, be witness, I'm shooting the first arrow to Hussein.
Wow.
I'm killing Hussein. But on the other hand, when we saw the companions of Hussein, then we see a whole different side. Just let me go into that a little bit, and we'll go into Musaib. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala
Muhammad.
See, this is a test that Allah gave to Umar ibn Sa'd to fail. You see, he brought him all the way there and that's where he failed. He didn't give this test to Zuhair or Habib. They didn't go through this test. You know? The reason is they didn't go to this test because, you know what? When you looked at their life, they were ready to give up everything. You see, this is where you see that Imam Hussein, when he brought those companions together on the night of Ashura, and he told those companions, listen, it's me they're fighting, not you. Go ahead. You don't need to be here. Do you know what that meant? Understand what that meant, my friends. When Imam Hussein said that you don't need to be here, this is me they're fighting. At first he took their bay'at away. He said, you know, if you're here because of haya and ghairat, I'll close the light on you. If you're here because of this reason, all those reasons there. He said, and then he said, they're here for me. They want to fight me, not you. You know? So what was he saying? He said, listen, don't give your lives for no reason. Now, jihad fi sabilillah is finished. Jihad fi sabilillah is finished. Now I take this jihad away from you. I take my bay'at away from you. And I take any obligation you have towards Allah away from you, and I will show you your places in heaven. Here, Jannah, this is your place. Habib, this is your place in Jannah. Muslim, this is your place in Jannah. Now you don't have to give up your lives. I'll put it in my words in order to explain it to you. What was he saying? He's saying, listen, now there's no jihad fi sabilillah. Now it's just between me and them. They want to kill me. That's all. They want to destroy the haram of Rasulullah. That's all. And I'll tell you this also. Soon I will be killed and the haram of Rasulullah will be taken away also. Both of these things will happen. So if you are going to stay, then you are giving your life not for Allah, not for Islam. You're giving your life just to delay my death for 5 minutes. Now you're giving your life not because of this. Now you're giving your life just so that my death is delayed for a few more hours and that haram of Rasulullah will not be destroyed for a few more hours. Because eventually I will die and the haram of Rasulullah will be taken away as prisoners. See that, my friends? Understand this. Now when they made the decision, this decision is not about jihad. This decision was not about jihad. This decision was giving up their life for Hussein's life. This was Isa. There you see why you love those who have Isa in them. Really, my friends, this is where you learn about Isa. You know, this is how Imam Hussein, there was one of the companions of Imam Hussein by the name of Nafi bin Hilal. On the night of Ashura, when it was dark, and he came to Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein was alone and no one was there with him. And he came to him and Imam Hussein was alone. Imam Hussein, he saw him alone, you know, Nafi. Understand this, my friend. And he whispered to Nafi, Nafi, come here. He came close. He said, you see those lights over there? Those lights in the other tents, Yazid's tents. You know, so much relaxation there. So much rest there, peace. You know, everything is all right there. There's tension here, anxiety here. Afe, you know what? Why trouble yourself? Go over there. Go on the other side. Go on the other side, you know. You'll be better off there. You know, see, Imam Hussein is even trying to get the people to leave like that, in such a strong way. Any lesser person would say, well, you know, Hussein told me to leave. You know, so I have to do what my Imam says. See, then you have Isar. See, this is the level of Isar, my friends. Imam, when he's saying this, he's telling the Imam, Imam, the only reason that's keeping me here is you. The only reason I'm here is because of you. You are the reason. My friends, giving yourself up for Hussein is not a hard thing to do. It's very easy. Imam Hussein makes it very easy because Imam Hussein is that good. You want to know who Imam Hussein is? Imagine Imam Hussein, my friends, in this way. Imagine him in this way. Are you ready to give your condolences to Rasulullah? Are you ready to give your condolences to Fatima? At least welcome her. At least welcome her so that she can accept the tears that you shed for her son Hussein. My friends, it's not easy, you know, it's not hard to give one's life for Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein makes it very easy. You know, everyone who was there in Karbala, you know, Imam Hussein outdid them in every way possible. Really, every way possible. You know, one of the companions of Imam Hussein had a slave, a Turkish slave. This Turkish slave was an unknown person. He was there. You know, you always have someone who are very unimportant. You don't really look at them, you don't really worry about them, you know, they're there in the camp, you know that, you know, no one's actually talking to them because, you know, they're lowly and this and that. This Turkish slave, you know, he is looking at all these great men. He's looking at all these great men, Habib ibn Mazar, Muslim ibn Awsaja, and Burair and Zuhair. These are not ordinary people. These are great men. And these great men that are there, they, you know, are like the highlights of this gathering. They're like the highlights of this gathering. And here you see this Turkish slave, one of the companion slaves. No one is noticing him, nothing. He sees that everyone is dying, his master has died, and he also wants to go and fight for Hussein. He loves Hussein. But you know what? Because of his lowly status, doesn't have the courage to go and speak to Hussein. You know, on one side of the battlefield, as he's fighting there in the battlefield, he sees everyone's example. Everyone, when they fight, they're saying, "Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah." And they fall to the ground. And they give their last salam to Hussein before they fall. He sees that example, and he also goes in the battlefield, thinking that, you know, who am I? What am I? I will just die over here on one side of the battlefield. No one would care about me. No one would come to me. No one would look at me. And then, you know, in that situation, when he was hurt and injured and he was falling to the ground, slowly he said, "Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah." "Assalamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah." He said that. And he fell to the ground. He fell unconscious. He was injured, he felt unconscious. He said, you know, "I'm going, who cares about me? I'm a nothing, I'm a nobody. My Mawlah is there on the other side. I just came to do something for my Mawlah, something for my master, that he can do something." And he fell unconscious on the ground. And you know, when he fell unconscious on the ground, after a while, he saw that there was some coolness in his face. He opened his eyes and he saw that Hussein's face was on top of his face. Hussein's face was on top of his face, giving that coolness to him. Hussein was saying, "Man misli, who's like me?" Who's like me? He gave that shade to Imam Hussein's face. And then he looked at him and said, "Mawlah, you came for me." "I thought no one noticed me. I thought no one cared about me. But Hussein came there." He said, "How can I not come? You called on to me, Hussein, in this part of the world. As we are crying, we call on to you that we are nobody, we are unnoticed. Hussein, take notice of us so that our guidance can be complete." This was Hussein, my friends. You want to know who Hussein is? This is Hussein. This is why everyone was ready to give their life for Hussein. It wasn't hard for them. When you have someone like Hussein, you're ready to do isar of yourself to him, giving up yourself to him. You know, let me just tell you a story about another companion of Hussein so that we can give our condolences. You know, there was another companion. He was actually a slave of Imam Hussein by the name of John. He was there by the name of John. And John also just was a slave. He was working there, doing things for them. He was just doing things for them, working there. And you see that as he was doing these things, he was an old person also. He came, you know, he wanted to go and defend Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein came to him and says, "John, why are you here, John? You're an old person. You're here working. Don't hurt yourself over me, John. Don't make yourself go through trouble because of me, John. Go away somewhere. Go away somewhere," and this and that. John said, "You know, master, I want to go in the battlefield, but I'm ashamed to go. I'm too ashamed to go in the battlefield." You know, because the battle of Karbala, these people who were around Imam Hussein were the most the most prestigious of human beings that you can find on earth. These people who had character, who had gems in them. You see, this is where you see that gem come out of them when they do Ithar. And you see those people around there. John was looking at these people. He said, if I go in the battlefield, I will put Hussein to shame by going out and announcing I'm here to fight. He was feeling ashamed to go outside. He was feeling embarrassed. I was saying, I don't want to represent you because I'm lowly. He came to him when Hussein said, John, you don't need to give your life. He says, Mawla, I want to go in the battlefield, but what can I do? What can I do? I don't want to embarrass you because, you know, my background is a lowly background. Everyone who has gone there, they came from a big tribe and a big name family. I have no family. If I announce myself, people will start laughing at you. That's why I'm not going. He said, Hussein, the second thing I am is that I'm dark. I'm dark. I know all these people who have gone, they are the Ashraf and the noble of the Arabs who have gone. If I go there, people will look at me and laugh at you. I don't want them to do that. Hussein, my body has an odor. If I die among the Shuhada, then the Shuhada, then their bodies will have to deal with my odor. They have to deal with my odor. So now when you look at that in that situation, when Hussein heard of that, when Hussein heard about that, Imam Hussein, he came and he told him that if this is the case, you think that I will believe in these things? Go then, John. I want you to go and represent me. I want you to go and I want you to be my soldier. John went inside there and he went to the battle. And when he fell from the battle, he fell in the battlefield, calling Imam Hussein. Hussein came next to him, put his cheek on top of John's cheek. And he said that Allahumma tahir badnahu tahir rihahu. He said wa tayyib rihahu. He said, oh Allah, make him bright in front of you. Oh Allah, make him have a fragrance. And you see, after that, it is said anyone who went near the body of John would smell a fragrance that comes out of his body. And you know what, after that, Imam Hussein said one more thing. Because John had said, I come from a lowly status. I don't have a mother and father. I don't have a big family. I don't have a big name or a big tribe. You know, after that, what Hussein said, Oh Allah, I ask you, take this servant of mine to my mother Fatima and tell her, this is from Hussein to you.
Y'all say.